Good morning. You're listening to KTAL LP 101.5 FM in Las Cruces, New Mexico. I'm your host, Lisa Luca, and this is Live True, a conversation about creating the life you want and the life you have. Are you ready? Let's get started.
Good morning, everyone. As always, I hope you're listening from the safety of your homes, unless you're one of our heroes in healthcare, food, grocery, government, delivery, utilities, law enforcement, and all other essential services. Thank you all for your efforts, and please stay safe as the number of cases increase across the state and in Dona Ana County. In my continuing series, we will continue to talk about life in the time of COVID-19. As we all navigate this pandemic here in New Mexico, everyone has a unique story about how this crisis is impacting their lives. My guest today, calling into my makeshift studio at home, is Manfred Schreier, an international photojournalist living here in Las Cruces. He has dedicated a page on his website, mirageartphotography.com, to the COVID-19 pandemic here in Dona Ana County, where he shares information, photographs from the front lines, and stories he has collected from our local citizens. Welcome to the show, Manfred.
Glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, I really appreciate it. You know, I came across your website, and I'm not exactly sure how. I think it was probably via Facebook in some way. And I was struck by how much information you had on the website. And then also, you have quite a lot of beautiful photography. So tell us a little bit about how you landed here in Las Cruces as a photojournalist.
Well, I moved here from the state of Ohio, and I decided it was literally too cloudy in the state of Ohio for 5 months. I used to take motorcycle rides of 5,000-6,000 miles across the country, and I went through Las Cruces many times, and I just enjoyed the city. So at one point, I ordered a master plan from the city just to see what their aspiration is for the city, and I was quite intrigued by the master plan and the infrastructure and so forth. So I sold my, I had a few businesses over in Ohio. I sold the businesses, I sold my home, and found a realtor here in Las Cruces, and I bought a home. That was in August of 2017, and I have not regretted. It is just beautiful, the environment, the people. I think it has a lot to do with the weather, but it's just people are more friendly, if I may say. More open. It's a very cultural environment here with so many cultures, from food to people. I mean, it's just fantastic. I feel home. And the people have received me very well. I made many, many friends here. And I just enjoy the environment, Lisa.
Well, I love it. I love it. And you're originally from Europe, right? Germany?
I came here in the 80s? Yes, I immigrated. I came to the United States in 1984. I was actually an exchange student in 1975-76 in Richmond, Indiana, on a dairy farm. I came from quite a switch. I came from Hamburg, a suburb of Hamburg in Buxtehude, and I lived on a dairy farm, had a wonderful experience. I'm still great friends with my host family. I lived with them for a year. They visited me in Germany, but in 1984, I decided to move to the United States. In 87, I became an American citizen. That's pretty much it.
Wow, that's interesting. So you're here in Las Cruces, and how did you get into photography? Is that always been a passion?
I have always had that passion. I've done it most of my life, I was very fortunate here to work with some organizations in the United States to take pictures worldwide. Actually, we can lead right into this. I was supposed to go on an assignment to India, to Delhi and the state of Meghalaya, up in the northeastern part of Delhi for about 5 weeks. And I was supposed to leave on March 16th. Now, March 16th, this is interesting, on March 12th, they revoked my visa for obvious reason, because suddenly they closed the borders and did not allow any foreigners into the country, into India anymore. So my trip literally was canceled. The assignment is not, but the trip was canceled. So if you remember, or if you know, at that point, India had about 173 cases of the infection in India, which was not much. And I always told my friends, yeah, I had watched somewhat the pandemic, the worldwide pandemic. I listened to the World Health Organization and so forth. And I always told my friends, I said, when I come back from India, this is going to be a major disaster. And some took it serious and some did not take it so serious. I think at that point, I'm going to look at my stats real quick. In the United States, on the 17th, we had 4,700 cases. So this is in the United States. Just remember, 4,700 cases. We now have almost 816,000 cases. Ugh. Yeah, so that, just imagine, I mean, from 4,700. So now India has 1.3 billion people. Mind this, and they went from 137 to today to about 20,000, which does not seem much, but I mind you, the testing there is quite different than it is for the rest of the world. I'm not blaming them or anything, but there is a lot of other political circumstances of migrant workers. There's in Mumbai, it's like 40,000 migrant workers stranded. They can't go to their family. They don't know how to get food for the next day. So the circumstances are quite different than in some other parts of the world, certainly in America.
Now, was this trip at all connected to this pandemic,
no,
or was it completely different?
It was it had nothing to do with it. It was a human rights assignment.
So we all get locked down, and now you're at home, and you're out there in the world, maybe taking pictures of the poppies like I did, because everybody went over to see them. That was my big outing in March. But more than that, you started photographing the frontline workers doing the testing.
What I did was I went to Walmart the next day.
Oh, the grocery store.
I wanted to go shopping.
Correct.
If you remember, if you look at the pictures,
that's
and what
right.
I saw
that was first.
Empty racks, like one tomato soup on the huge shelf, if you remember that picture. I saw people in line. There was no beef. There were a couple, let's say, 10 days where there was a little. And I talked to Walmart workers later on. And they said they sold in 2 weeks the grocery supply of what they sell 6 months. Just imagine that. I mean, that's phenomenal. So they sold in 2 weeks a 6 month supply of groceries. Never mind toilet paper. Forget all this. It's
just the groceries.
Just groceries, which was, so I took pictures of that because as a normal thing, I always have a camera with me. And then I thought, I'm going to post these pictures. And then at that point, I don't know, Lisa, but you remember you had to float around on the internet to get statistical numbers, to get applications, to see what is going on. And it was just a big mess because you had to go back and forth. And I thought, well, I'm going to put this on one page so people have an idea where to go to. For instance, there was a shopping app where you could actually see what store had what items. There was statistical information from the state of New Mexico and so forth. So that's how that developed. Yeah.
That's really interesting. Well, and you're right. I think until I stumbled onto the worldometers.info site, I really didn't get a clear picture. That's a very interesting site. And also now newmexico.gov has a link to a very comprehensive site about what's happening here in New Mexico, even down to the zip code. That's a really interesting micro information that's available there. So you went into the grocery stores, you saw that the shelves were empty and started photographing those on your website. How did you end up taking pictures of the drive-through testing?
Well, some point they then had at Burr College a testing site, and I thought, I'm going to go out there. I want to see how many people are actually going out there. The testing, I think, was scheduled for, correct me if I'm wrong, Lisa, I think 3 days, two, three
mm-hmm.
days.
Mm-hmm. I think area. It was a couple times, yeah.
Yeah. So I went out there, and there were miles of lines. And then I waited. I awaited for a week the testing results. Not for the results, but for the statistical information. And then I posted that. So there was, of course, there was an increase. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
Okay. And yeah, that's how I got out there, and people were very accommodating. I couldn't go in the tent directly. And then I had somebody in Las Cruces who took pictures for me, who actually went to the testing through the testing facility, and I posted them as well. At that point, I thought, I have to create a timeline. If you go on my site at Mirage Art Photography, there is a timeline from basically March 16th till today. So almost every day there is some piece of information how things changed. Mm-hmm. The important thing, I think, is for us to recognize that for our kids and grandchildren to know what happened in this part of history. For now, things are still there, sometimes foggy, but with this timeline, we know what happened and how things evolved. So this person went through the testing line, and she took some pictures as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how these pictures
came compelling. Along. And then you also started sharing stories from the community, from different citizens in Doña Aña County and here in the city of Las Cruces. And you continue to post them, looks like, on a very regular basis, and they're quite poignant and interesting. How did that start for you?
Well, as you know, when you're locked in, so there's a few things. So one is, and I don't want to self-promote myself here, but I'm also a web designer, so I design websites during my idle time. You can imagine the 6 weeks were out of my assignments. I had no assignments locally. I didn't take any appointments or anything because I was under the impression that I'm leaving on the assignment.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly some of associates which I had known, they said, we got to do something. We have a store. We want to have some online stores to get the feed business back. So I developed some online store websites for them here, and that's still what I'm doing now. And I got to know them and some of their friends when I talked to them, and I heard their stories. And the stories are quite different.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, they're just going to give a layout how their life is at home, that they eat well, and that they gain weight and get bored stiff, and Netflix is about to explode. Now, the stories were quite different. And I said to them, you know, would you mind sharing these stories on my pages, on my thing? Because it's important for people to know. And if you go there, and I know you have been there, there are some very, very heartbreaking stories. There are some very positive stories as well. But there are some heartbreaking stories which people don't realize what they go through. And as you and I have talked before, they are just like little prayers going out to say, hey, here I am. They're not waiting for answers or solutions or anything. They're just laying them out to us to say, hey, we are all in this together. I'm a human being. You're a human being. Just listen to my story. And so that's what it is. This, if I could mention one story which really got to me, was, and I won't mention the name there, it's Vinnie G, but this story is, the heading is Alone and Empty. Mm. And she has two older granddaughters. They lost their jobs. They have both asthma, very vulnerable. The grandmother is contributing to their bills. She had lost her husband in a rampage in Albuquerque. Her husband was murdered. I mean, it's unbelievable. She moved to Las Cruces. That person moved to Las Cruces and is now completely isolated and is so afraid that she's losing her granddaughters. I mean, the story is just heartbreaking. I can't even associate with circumstances like that. She says she's lost everything in her life, and now she's going to lose this. So what, you know, it's like this, it's like falling into an abyss, not knowing. And to tell you, if you can sum it all up in all stories, what there, I think there's about 20 right now posted on there, is not, people can deal with the circumstance. People can deal that there is no toilet paper. People can deal with that they can't go out and have a glass of wine or a Kentucky Fried Chicken or whatever. What mm-hmm. is very hard for them to deal with is, when is the end point and what is the end point? That's the, I think that's the great obstacle for most of them to overcome, Lisa.
Yeah, I agree. And I also feel, too, that that end point is more about being able to put down the fear, right? For this case, for Vinny, as an example, you know, and I've read her story, and it's very poignant. And her daughter is also a nurse practitioner in the ER in Albuquerque, which puts her at risk with the two granddaughters who have asthma. I mean, it's heartbreaking.
It's a movie.
And the thing is that this is just one of just thousands of stories of people who are living in fear and anxiety for the people that they love. It may not be that they're fearing for themselves. It sounds like she's pretty content to stay at home, and she knows that that's the best thing for her. But she's scared to death for her family. And I think that that's a really important piece of this. You know, I've been doing this series shows about people across the country and here in Las Cruces going through this, and some people are doing quite well and doing fine, especially if their nearest and dearest are also nearby, especially here in our somewhat, I call the bubble of southern New Mexico compared to people who live where all my people are in Chicago. They're in the Chicago suburbs, which is very hot spot right now. And so, you know, a lot of my concern and my fear is connected with the people that I care about here, of course, but also my mother, my sister, and my son, who are all living in that area. So, again, what you're doing here is like sending out little prayers and also hope, so that we don't all feel so alone with our fear. But also there are also stories that are hopeful and stories that are
absolutely
have some humor to them. I know one talked about her classes that she misses, her Tai Chi class at Senior Amigos, and I thought, I miss my yoga class at Senior Amigos. You know, and so we can all sort of, you know, a lot of them, and I can include myself in this, you know, we're adapting to being at home rather well in this sense of being, I'm home a lot anyway. You know, I work from home, and I always work from home, so it's not that difficult a thing. For me, you know, doing the show from home is one of the differences as opposed to going into the studio, which I think is better for me to do it from here. So I love that you're doing the stories, and people can go to your page and send in their stories if they like. Is that correct?
Yeah. There's a tab there, and it says, we would like to publish your story. Click here. So all they have to do is click there, and then they can insert there. We would like to have, unless it is, we would like to have their full name on there to validate that they really are who they are. That's the only thing. And the rest of the story, I just post that, with the exception of Vinny, because there are some issues there.
Sure. It's also really nice to have... to see that other people are just hanging in there. They're bored. They wish that this would be over, but they're doing okay. That also is helpful. Yeah. It's okay to send in the stories of, I'm here, I'm okay, and we're going to get through this, because those stories are valid as well and really important for us to share.
I think But once again, I just want to stress this underlying point. For most people, the stress factor is not being at home like you and I. We have our fridge is probably full and so forth. The major stress factor is, when is this going to end? What is going to end it?
Mm-hmm.
That is a stress factor. And that constantly goes into my head as well, and it leaps out into other areas.
Sure.
And we can talk about that later if you like. But that's one of the major points, and I think that will eat us over time. That will be, the further this goes on, that will eat us more than anything else. I can stay busy here until the rest of the my life, and you probably can do interview people until the end. But there is an outside area out there which we want to tap into again. And what will it take? What will it take to get into that area?
Absolutely. And families with children or grandparents who are concerned about their families that
yes.
have children, they're the ones that are most suffering in some cases, because the economic impact, the school impact, there's quite a bit. I think that
yes.
overall our school system here with parents working with their kids, there doesn't seem to be as much pressure here. Based on the families I spoke to on the show a couple weeks ago, everybody's handling it pretty well. And that's a blessing in that we're not seeing a push to get back out there and get our kids back in school. I think overall in the nation, the push to go back to school has not happened. It's more about businesses opening than kids going back to school, which creates another problem for parents, that even if they can go back to work and their kids aren't in school, then there's a child care concern.
And right, Lisa, and I agree with you there. In looking into that issue, and I want to address it at some point on my site as well, there are a couple things which we also have to remember. One is that a number of kids do not have the ability to log in due to broadband width, due to rural areas. So if you're a household with 2-3 kids, the broadband, you're just sucking it up dry, and you're not
absolutely, or only one laptop to share between them, or whatever.
Exactly.
They're all in different
so
grades.
What
sure.
what will happen there in the future? And this is also something to think about for the future for our country, because this can't go on if you're in the middle of the desert and you don't have any access or not much access to the broadband. You're literally left out. The other thing is that I saw a study from El Paso where a number of kids have not even logged in to the assignments or the curriculum.
So
what will happen there? So these are, these are all the drops of this pandemic. What people don't think about it yet, but it will have an impact.
Absolutely. So yeah. Let's talk about not so much how this ends, but how we start coming out of it. One of the things that you're doing is a survey, and this began yesterday, is that correct?
Yeah, I only have it run one day, and I will do it in 10-day interval, around 10-day interval, so I can see like a barometer what we feel in this county. And this may be quite different, and it's by no way scientific. I'm not a statistician.
Sure.
I'm not a scientist. I don't claim to be. I just put the survey out there, whoever answers, and then I get it back in. So.
And this is on Facebook? Primarily,
it's on Facebook promoted, but then you go to my survey site on mirageartphotography.com, and then you fill the survey out there. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and some of the data that you collected from how many? Do you have any idea how many people responded?
There are a little over 100 in the 24-hour period.
Okay, well, that's okay. Significant.
Okay, I think it gives us and over time it will even give us a better feel over this, you know.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so your first question was, do you suffer financially because of the pandemic? And it was almost evenly split. Yes at 45%, no at 55%. And then also, have you, your relatives or friends been infected by the virus? And happy to report, no at 70%. Yes was only a little over 12%, and a little under 20% weren't sure. And that's good news that people haven't known people who are infected. I personally in my family only have had a cousin in the Chicago area, and she contracted the disease. She did not have to be hospitalized, thank God. She's pregnant, and she quarantined upstairs for 2 weeks while her husband and three boys took care of the rest of the house, and she's come out of it okay, and the baby's okay. That's the closest person to me. How about in your life? Have you had someone close to you?
I know, I know several people who were positive tested. And I mind you that in this question, the question was, have you, your relatives, or friends been infected?
Mm-hmm.
So that's three components in there. So, and the no is 70%. Yeah, I know several people from Ohio and here in Las Cruces who had been infected. They were not hospitalized, but they had been tested positive and put in quarantine.
Okay. Another interesting answer was, how do you feel about opening all businesses up soon? And more than 53% who are against it, 20% in favor, and the rest were unsure.
Yes.
So that's also encouraging that we only have a handful of people really wanting the businesses to open soon, knowing that we are on the back end of this in regards to the surge. And we have been told, obviously, by the governor, but by the medical professionals, that for this to roll through the country, it's unlikely that we'll have a peak here until sometime in later May.
Can I say a few things about that question? Because that question really leads into a great array of conversation.
Absolutely.
So I believe, and I can't say it is, but that those who said I'm in favor are mostly business owners. I'm
mm-hmm.
just going to make that statement. That's what I
mm-hmm.
think. And let me say a couple things about that. So in America, there are really three entities right now who struggle. So one is the business owner, one is the consumer, and the other are political activists who believe in their libertarian constitutional right to
mm-hmm.
do whatever they want to do. So there's three groups who struggle, and they literally, I don't want to say fight, but they argue very heavily.
Mm-hmm.
I have I have friends in Ohio who are stern supporter of the constitutional right to say, I want to open my business. The health department has no right over my business. And I mean, the conversation goes on and goes on.
Of course.
And my question to them is this. So one is, if there are no guidelines for a consumer, how to behave in a pandemic like this when the store is open, it is unsafe. So let me give you an example. If I go to Walmart here in Las Cruces and I find gloves in the parking lot, I'm questioning, what do people think? Why do people throw gloves away? This and not against Walmart. Let's say any store opens up and people just throw their gloves into the trash container. In my opinion, that's a hazardous waste. I mean, not something, you know. Let's take a boutique or a clothing store where people change their T-shirt or whatever. What happens with that T-shirt once I try it on and I don't want it? What happens? There are no guidelines in how to behave when I go shopping. You know,
correct.
So the state has to clearly outline, if I go to a restaurant, what I should do and what I should not do, because I rely on some information to keep me safe. I know what I should or should not do, but let's face it, even if I get today food delivered, what tells me that that container doesn't have the virus on? I'm not blaming anybody.
Nothing.
I know. No, there's nothing with it. So if we loosen this up to the extent where businesses are opened up, there have to be some guidelines how the consumer and the businesses should behave or should not behave. There is this tension between economic fervor and those who, that's what it is. It's
over loss of life.
And if you're a small business owner and you have all your savings in a small business, what do? You cry out for help. We know what happened here now with the checks, the business loans, how they went through, who got them, who didn't get them. I mean, small business guys, in most cases, don't get any money.
Well, we're hoping that this next wave of support that's just been voted on yesterday, hopefully there has been a clamp down on large businesses going after that money, and we have to hope that it will be allocated more fairly through the small business groups that go after, you know, go and apply for money that they have a right to. It's the same thing with unemployment. It's the same thing with any support that's coming out of these bills. Part of it is people knowing and having the support to apply for them. It's not easy to navigate. I've been to these websites to see what they're like, and they're confusing, and sometimes they're broken. I know the unemployment site here in New Mexico had several days in which it was having problems with just too much of a surge of use. And that's, you know, we're breaking the internet these days all the time with everybody on it 24/7. So again, it's going to require a lot of different machinations before we can, quote, open up, and it will be gradual, and it will have to be with some restriction. I'm going to take a little break here real quick. You are listening to Live True with Lisa Luca on KTAL LP 101.5 FM in Las Cruces, New Mexico. I'm here talking with my guest, Manfred Schreier, and he is an international photojournalist living here in Las Cruces who has a very comprehensive page on his website with lots of information about the COVID-19 pandemic, and his website is mirageartphotography.com. And we're talking about how this is impacting the citizens. There are lots of stories on Manfred's website about that, and also how in a survey to our citizens that will continue over the next week and a half or so, what the impact of this is on people and what their views are on opening up and about testing, which is another of the questions on your survey, if people believe we've done enough testing, which no at 65%, 15% said yes, and 20% were unsure. And I found that a little interesting in the sense that we in New Mexico have done quite a bit of testing per capita compared to many, many other states. And I would give kudos to Governor Lujan Grisham for that, because she's been a very big advocate of testing. But we've done over 40,000 here, which is approximately 20,000 per million, compared to some states that have done well under 10,000 with a greater population than we have. What are your thoughts about the testing in New Mexico?
Can I just for a second go back to the business environment with the loans?
Sure.
I want to address something else, because I think it's a inequality between. So you take, for instance, the stimulus check, which was received or is going to be received by most Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get yours yet?
I have not.
Okay. So,
and I believe it's because I'm self-employed and I pay at the end of every tax year.
Right.
So
yeah.
I don't have banking.
And I have not gotten mine yet either. But
yeah.
Right. But there are many people out there who need that check desperately.
Correct.
Desperately. Utility bill, food, housing, car, whatever it is.
Yes.
Now think of this, even Social Security recipients who receive a check no matter what also get the stimulus check.
Mm-hmm.
Besides those who have lost their job and desperately need the stimulus check, that's not equality. For one, it is an added bonus, and for the other is a desperate rope to hang on to. That's in my case. And so I compare that with the business loans as well, with the big boys and the smaller boys. Even though it is promised that now in the second shift, everybody will have a chance to recuperate, how long has this now been? How long can businesses survive under these circumstances?
Banks, I absolutely agree.
And for banks to facilitate that process, I'm not blaming the banks, but to facilitate this process of hundreds of thousands of businesses who apply for a loan, it's mind-boggling. Anyway, so that's, I just wanted to add that to it, just something. And I'm not against Social Security recipients. Don't misunderstand me. I'm just taking the thing. So enough testing. Yeah, I mean, people, I think it's in their role. I think they believe that everybody should be tested. Don't you think, Lisa? That's what I get out of that, that they, it's not only if you have a symptom that you go for to test, but also, hey, have I had this virus? And then the problem with the testing is also the asymptomatic thing, the false rate. I mean, there's so many problems with the testing itself.
Correct.
Yeah, and we've been good. I 100% agree with you. New Mexico has been good, and the governor, I think, has done a phenomenal job in facilitating
Agreed.
This entire process. But as an individual who lives here, we probably think, hey, I deserve to be tested. Do I have it? Do I not have it?
I understand, and you know that's a national debate that a
yes.
lot of people are talking
yes.
about, and they're also saying,
yes.
well, you know, and if I test negative today, does that mean that I'm not positive tomorrow, and do you test people every day? And they've talked about that for certain groups. I just read something about them considering in the NFL, I believe, to
yeah.
test everybody yeah. every day and let them play to an empty stadium so people can watch the football games on TV. You know, there are all different things being floated around about
yes.
how testing, how antibody testing, and we can go way down the rabbit hole of that. But I think in general, people want to see massive testing,
yes.
and
yes.
we in New Mexico are lucky to at least have testing for people who have symptoms, and it's beneficial for at least that. There are some states that you can't even get a test, so if under certain circumstances,
yeah.
where we are doing much better,
and that leads to the next phase of okay, so you now get tested, and either you have it or you don't have it. But what will happen next? You and I talked about this. What will happen into this next phase? So what we desperately need around the globe is a treatment, besides
yes.
the vaccination itself. But we need a treatment. And the problem is this. So we have, again, we talked about this, 8 billion people around the world.
Mm-hmm.
To find a treatment or a vaccination, to find a vaccination, they now say it will take at least 18 months. So let's say we find an 18-month a vaccination. To mass produce this will take another significant time. then to get to the general populace will take another significant time. So what we really desperately need right now is a treatment. So all the testing really doesn't do much good at all. You will know that you have it or you don't have it. So I think right now the testing philosophy of if you're sick, get tested. The rest of the population is really not that relevant, because even if you have it, I'm going to say it bluntly, what makes the difference? You have it. There's no treatment. There's no vaccination. So now you know you have to deal with the facts. So the important thing is only that you get tested when you have a symptom. And that was pretty much, go ahead, Lisa.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, I hear what you're saying about that, but there is the people that are asymptomatic that are tested that then would be quarantined, who would be much more careful about being around others. I think it's really important, even within a family situation. You know, if my cousin had not had a fever, then if she didn't know, she could have given that to her three little kids or her husband, and then when she got very sick, who was going to take care of those kids? So, I don't know. I have a mixed feeling about it, because we are being told over and over there are so many asymptomatic people, maybe as high as 25 to 50%. We don't know. And so how many people who have been tested that never got symptoms because they were, I don't know, exposed or a celebrity or something, we now find out that if they had just been walking around in the population, they could have very easily given someone much more vulnerable the virus. And I think that's the bottom line. It's not about whether or not you get it and you get real sick and whether or not you can survive it. That's one layer. The other is you get it, you don't get sick, but you get someone else sick who will not survive it. And now who is really culpable at that point? And it's not the person who didn't know they were sick. In some ways, it's this public health interest to know who's sick.
That's correct, Lisa, and I agree with you, and I go that way with you all the way. But the problem is, you take the recent development, I don't know if you followed that, from Abbott Laboratory in Chicago, a pharmaceutical company. They developed this machine for the testing. Well, just recently on NPR, they had a documentation where there's so much faulty testing in that apparatus. I don't think we're there yet. If there is a quick way to test this and to identify the symptoms and so forth, then I'm going all the way. But here is still the risk that there is like 15 to 70% false testing. That's pretty high. I mean, that's pretty high. So what does that help either way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. There are no easy answers.
That's all of this is my greater worry. I see it as a global thing. What will happen? How are we going to solve this? And then on the other side is, okay, we need to go outside and we need to support our businesses again. I mean, it's just, think of all the sporting events, public festivals, all these things are at a zero rate right now. And people demonstrate that to open all this back up. And we have to find a solution. We have to find a solution.
Absolutely. And I know very close to my life, a lot of people in that industry, the touring industry of live performance and major conventions, that are road crews and lighting designers and people who are stopped completely and know that they're not going to work for at least a year. It's not even when do we get to go back on tour. You just know that there will not be 30,000 people in a stadium watching a rock show in September. It's just not going to happen.
Absolutely.
So it's a difficult time for so many people, and yet on the other side of it, we can watch our planet take a huge breath, and suddenly the water's clearer and the air is cleaner and the animals are thriving in different places that they had not been in a long time. I just saw the most extraordinary video of flamingo in India, and it was just an incredible thing. And I think they said it was like 30% more than normal. You know, that there's just the animal kingdom is flourishing, and the air and water, as we have less cars and less human movement around the globe.
There is no question in my mind that some of this has deep roots in the ecological system of our Earth. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the virus. And I don't want to call that the Earth is starting a rebellion, but they're all intertwined. And I'm not even going to say where it falls. I'm just going to say there is an ecological system which is out of balance.
And, absolutely.
I don't have the answer, and I'm sure you don't have the answer, but we've got to come together and find something. Once again, I don't know, I don't want to say fear, but this uncertainty is difficult, and it's difficult for me. Let me give you an example. I have an assignment for the end of September to Berlin, Moscow, Beirut, Istanbul and Marrakesh and back. It's a 6-week assignment. All the flights are booked. Every assignment is gone. Will I go or will I not go? You know what I mean?
Sure.
I have no clue. Everything is booked. So the implications there are vast. People are suffering all surrounding these circumstances. The airlines, I can't put assignments. If I say, okay, I'm not flying, I'll make... I get ready and do some web designs or do some local things or some national things. I'll figure something out. But right now, I can't. And so it is with all the rest of my people, like you and someone else. They're in the same boat. And so with that, there'll be a sociological shift as well. One of my questions on the survey, if you remember, was, so will shopping behavior change, switch, because a lot of people do obviously now online shopping, if it is getting the groceries from Albertson or Walmart or whatever, Amazon, all of that. Will people get used to that and not go to the brick and mortar stores anymore? I mean, there will be a dramatic sociological shift.
I agree. I also think too, though, that there may be the opposite could happen. I know, you know, there are lots of small markets around town. There are lots of restaurants that people can still go and get takeout from, and that's another way to still serve our business community and go pick things up curbside. You know, people have gotten very creative on how they're getting things done in their life. I know one of the stories on your website was somebody who had cut her own hair, and that was a little bit humorous.
Not so much.
I needed trim really badly. Luckily, Mark, my partner, I cut his hair, so he doesn't have to worry. But wow,
I'm bald, so I'm good.
There you go, you're good. So everybody's got their own challenges that don't affect somebody else. I just hope that when we come out of this on the other side, that we have a real sense of community, that we're all in it together, a more global sense of our humanity, and also that the earth and the healing that we've had happen. And this is Earth Day. Today is Earth Day. And the earth is breathing a little easier today. And I hope that whatever we have done for, you know, the cause to do, that we continue to do that, being more mindful about the things that have caused our air and our water to suffer. So it's a very interesting time in the sense that, some of it is Mother Nature telling us that, you know, we need to all go to our rooms and until we can maybe come out and do better. So I'm hoping that we'll learn some of those lessons and that at least some of the healing can be maintained and sustained.
And we find some quiet time for ourselves as well. You know, in my life, and I'm sure in your life as well, it was like going from one thing to the next without any interruption, even though we thought we have some interruption maybe on the Sunday or whatever, but we always find something busy to do which needs to get done. Now, actually, I can stand up, breathe, sit down outside in my yard and just take a half hour and do nothing and just evaluate. I don't have to think about future things. You know what I mean? I can just be who I was meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows us for reflection in how to deal with other people, have more compassion, learn more about other people, learn out more about people and about circumstances. And you are absolutely right. Bring us closer together.
Yeah, that's a really good hope, especially, as I said, today being Earth Day. And for us in Las Cruces, that everyone can get the support that they need. I mentioned a couple weeks ago on the show, there's an organization called TogetherLasCruces.org, and they have had over $400,000 in donations to help Las Cruces residents who've had an economic impact from COVID-19.
I did not know that.
You can maybe add that to your site.
Absolutely,
and,
yes.
For our listeners, if you're interested in more information on applying or donating, you can go to TogetherLasCruces.org. And, of course, on your website, Manfred, you have lots of different links, and you have links to the NewMexico.gov information, and there's, like I said, information all the way down to the zip code, along with people who want to share their stories and see some of the pictures that are on there related with the outbreak in Las Cruces. So it's really been wonderful having you on the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
That you could bring so much to the conversation about this epidemic in Las Cruces and how we're all going to get through it together. I really appreciate what you bring to the community. And again, Manfred's website is mirageartphotography.com.
Lisa, thank you very much for inviting me, and I hope I'll meet you in person someday. Have a burger or something.
Sounds good.
We go shopping together, okay?
Thank you, Manfred. You have a wonderful day.
Much.
Thank you.
You too, Lisa. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone, for joining me today. And thank you for listening to Live True every Friday morning at 10 a.m. on KTAL LP 101.5. During this time, please stay home as much as you can, reach out virtually to those who matter to you, and until next time, I'm Lisa Luca, reminding you to live true. During these strange and difficult times, it's important for us to realize that we live in a community where good things are also happening. So this is a KTAL community moment. One Las Cruces venue and recording studio, The Range, streams live sessions with a different band every Saturday at 1:30 p.m. on its YouTube channel. Owner Logan Sage said, "Music can play a role in helping communities through this pandemic. We wanted to ramp up what we're doing online for the community." This KTAL Community Moment is made possible by the generous and thoughtful acts of kindness of our Las Cruces community. If you have a feel-good story for our listeners, let us know on our Contact Us page at lccommunityradio.org.